I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. President Trump's executive order banning refugees from around the world is what we talk about this hour. It has resulted in mass confusion, refugees being deported or detained for long periods of time at airports all over the country, massive protests, officials at airports attempting to enforce a law they had no warning of, refugee and resettlement organizations not being able to get guidance. Guidance is coming in about a day at a time. The order said in order to protect Americans, the U.S. must ensure that those admitted to this country do not bear hostile attitudes toward it and its founding principles. For the next 90 days, nearly all travelers, except U.S. citizens traveling on passports from Iraq, Syria, Sudan, Iran, Somalia, Libya, and Yemen, will be temporarily suspended from entry to the United States. The 90-day period, according to the order, will allow for proper review and establishing of standards to prevent terrorist or criminal infiltration by foreign nationals. The refugee admissions program will be temporarily suspended for the next 120 days while interagency partners review screening procedures to ensure refugees admitted in the future do not pose a security risk to citizens of the United States. It also mentioned those with green cards, but it was unclear if the people with green cards were going to be affected. That evidently that situation has changed and they will be admitted. But there are still many questions. What has happened in Wisconsin? How are resettlement programs reading the order? And importantly, how have families either coming to this state or already here being affected? We have two guests with us today. Mary Flynn has been here before. She is the program supervisor at Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan, overseeing the Refugee Resettlement Organization. She is the longtime host of her own music program here on Wisconsin Public Radio, The Blue Side. And we thank you very much for joining us again, Mary. Hello.
Thank you, Kathleen. Yeah,
Thank you. Rafat Arain is also here. She is originally from Pakistan. She's been in the U.S. for over 40 years. She is the owner of Crescent Learning Center on Layton Avenue in Milwaukee. And the clients she serves are majority refugees. She has assisted with Bosnian, Somali refugees in Milwaukee, as well as Iraqi and Syrian refugees. And as she said a long time ago, but still in this lifetime, she has been a practicing dentist as well. Rafat, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm sorry, my voice is gone, but thank you.
Thank you. We hear you.
Okay.
We hear you, and what you have to say is important. And let me just get an idea of what's happening right now. This order, nobody really knew what was in the order. It was, as everybody knows, chaos all over the country at airports. I'm sure chaos in your organizations. You were expecting people to arrive, weren't you, Mary, on Monday of this week? And there
yes.
are more who are supposed to come in the next couple weeks. Do you know what the status is of people you were expecting?
All travel, no, we do not know the status. Our job starts at the airport, and anything before people arrive into the United States is really under the purview of the International Organization on Migration, also known as IOM. And so we do not have any influence really on pre-processing. We become aware of cases coming in. We do what's called an assurance. We are able to review the case. We're asked if we'll accept it for placement in Milwaukee or Madison. And that assurance process can happen anywhere from like 1 week to literally years before they actually arrive in the United States. And then we put them on the pending arrivals list. Then we get only 1 to 2 weeks notice that a case is actually going to arrive. So we have to quickly find housing, do all the pre-arrival responsibilities that we're charged with. So we had one case was supposed to arrive yesterday, and we've had upwards of 8 cases going into February where travel's completely deleted, and we've been told that there will be no further travel scheduled for the next 120 days.
Do you have any idea what's happened to those people who were supposed to be here? Where are they now?
We have no idea where they are. They were probably informed by IOM and the Refugee Processing Center that travel will not be happening and return to wherever, whatever living situation they had been in while they were awaiting travel. So that might be a refugee camp. It might be an urban center like Kuala Lumpur. Many people live in Kuala Lumpur. We are not aware of what may have happened.
And many of the refugees who come to Wisconsin are coming from one of those 7 countries, right?
Yes. There is a large group of people that are coming from Burma. Burma has 8 different states. Every state has its own language, its own culture, its own ethnicity. They are not on the list, but all refugees have been stopped or banned for 120 days. Of interest to me is a particular ethnic group called the Rohingya. And they are the majority population of Arakan State, but they're a minority population in that they're Muslim. And they are terribly discriminated against and persecuted no matter where they go. And if they do flee Burma, which they have to due to military oppression and governmental oppression, they have now been stripped of their citizenship. So they're actually stateless. They have no home to return to.
Rafat, how did you happen to come here? You're from Pakistan originally. What was it like when you came, and under what circumstances did you come?
Oh, like I said, that I'm a dentist, and I was, because there was a lack of dentists in the United States, I got my visa right in Pakistan at 40 years ago. I came here because my family was here. I come from a medical family. Most of my siblings are in medical field. So I just came to join them. And it was a pleasure. At that time, when I came, people were very welcoming. I mean, they still are. They still are. Really, majority of the people of America, the Americans are very welcoming. Unfortunately, there's a bad air going on right now, and basically, America was a land of opportunity, and that's how people would come here and make their lives and do, you know, whatever they wanted to. So I came here as a dentist, and then, of course, I've been here and got married, had my children, stayed at home taking care of my kids, then decided to go into social work. And I'm doing social work since, I think, 25 years. That's all that I've been doing, helping with different organizations and peace actions and all kinds of mm-hmm. organizations. That's where I thought that in this country there were so many people that stood up for justice and equality and all of that, that attracted me to all these organizations. So I really appreciate the idea of America, the way it really is right now. I hope and I pray it's just a temporary stage that we are going through right now. But this is a land for everyone, and that's how I feel.
And tell me about the work you're doing with refugees in Milwaukee.
Actually, I got involved with the, due to my social work, I got involved with the refugees when the Bosnian genocide happened. Mm. At that time, we had some Bosnians that come in, that was new to us at that time. So we had them living in our houses, and we were taking care of the kids. They were going to the schools, in our school districts and everything. And then after that, it was 9/11 happened, and it will be shocking for people to know that 9/11 happened, and 3 days later, and on the 14th of September, we went to receive a family of 8 refugees coming from Afghanistan. We went there to receive them, but there were a lot of people at Mitchell. When they found out that these are refugees that are coming from Afghanistan, they were welcoming them. They were going and buying soda and bringing it to the kids and all of that. So this was what America was. This is what America is, and this is what America should be. They were welcoming them 3 days after 9/11, when they thought that the terrorists had come from those lands, and they were welcoming them. Now I don't know what's happened. Now I don't know why they are telling the refugees not to come in, because not in my life have I ever heard that a refugee has done anything that is terrorist. They are running away from terror, not towards terror. They are not the creator of terrorism. They are the victim of terrorism.
Mary, the president, obviously, I read part of that executive order, has framed this in terms of keeping America safe. We want to make sure that these people are thoroughly vetted before they come here. I was reading information that you sent, and also in today's New York Times, this very lengthy process that you have to go through. It would appear to me that most people who are coming here, I think it's safe to say, are pretty thoroughly vetted, are they not?
I really feel that they are, and I'm really confident in that process because we see it at many different levels in our job, even though we don't have any awareness of the activities of pre-arrival, because, I mean, that's not the work that we do. Our job, once again, starts at the airport. We know that there are some people that cannot even be registered as refugees by the UN because they didn't even make that level of screening. You know, there's all sorts of information that is shared, you know, through communities and through groups, and stories don't match, and they don't even get refugee status because they can't pass that interview process. In our office, however, we often see when travel is scheduled, there's something called an advance booking notice, also called an ABN. And every once in a while, just before they arrive, it'll say travel deleted, and there will be a code. And sometimes the code will say security clearance. Something changed. Something went wrong. And they're either never going to come or they're going to recheck most of that security screening again. We see that quite often. So we know that that's in place. Periodically, we get visits from FBI and Homeland Security. They ask us a few questions. I'm confident that they're aware of what's going on, that they're watching what's going on, and we may not see it, but I know that they're there, and I know that they're constantly trying to do their best to keep this process safe for all of us.
Would it be in the business of resettlement agencies? There are now the state of Washington, the governor and the attorney general of the state are suing the administration on this executive order. There are people in the Justice Department who are concerned about Department of State. Certainly there are a lot of diplomats who are concerned, other nations concerned about this as well. Are there possibilities, or would it be in the purview of resettlement agencies to join a lawsuit against this or not?
You know, we are asked to resettle refugees as part of a very organized process that's done through the gatekeepers at the Department of State. And I think that that's what our focus should be. That's what we do best, is that we follow the guidelines that are set forth by the Department of State. As to whether we should join a lawsuit, I mean, this is actually the work that we're in, and maybe it's best that that voice come from the mainstream community. I can hardly be neutral about the subject because I am serving refugees, but I think that would be a question possibly for, like, my CEO or executive board as to how they would feel about stepping into that.
Give me more of a sense. Both of you are working with refugees every day. You've briefly mentioned what some people are facing. Let's hear more stories of people who have come to Wisconsin and why they landed here. What were they facing at home? Rafat?
It was just the refugees that were from Afghanistan, and all of obviously Afghanistan was a war zone, and they were displaced from their homeland, and so they had to move. And even the Somalis that I'm serving right now, they also were taken away from their homeland, and there was terror in their land. So that's why they moved out of. They were not allowed to be themselves in their own countries. So that's why they were moved to they chose to come. I mean, they didn't choose. Some of them, they were allotted. Some of them have their families in different countries. It's not all of them are in the States. Some went to Sweden, some went to Germany, and some have come here. And like Mary was saying, I know families that have who were told that their family members would be coming soon, and the papers were done, and then at the last minute they found out they're not coming, and they never came. And they have not come yet. So it has happened. It does happen that they do the vetting a lot, that security is checked a lot. So for that reason, for whatever reason, I mean, they were not allowed to come.
Mary, who have you worked with lately?
We've worked with people from anywhere from 7 or 8 different countries, and I certainly have some stories that I could tell you.
Please.
That people have told me directly. A person told me one time that when the Americans first came into Baghdad, that he decided to work with them to make his community a better place, and he became an interpreter, and he was working and doing some work with the U.S. military. One day he came home from work, and his wife handed him a letter and said, "While you were gone, somebody came and slipped this letter into our door." And when he opened up the letter, it said, "We know that you're working with the Americans, and when we catch you, we will rape your wife in front of you, and we will cut you into little pieces in front of your family." To kind of bring that to something that I really felt in my heart was when some staff and I went up to a conference up in the Twin Cities. And the next morning, one of my staff said to me, "Mary, the bill slipped under my door there's something that slipped under my door last night. Is this normal?" And it was the bill. And I said, "Yes, that's very common." And they all looked at each other. They were 3 Iraqis, and they all looked at each other and their faces. Mm. And I remembered that story. And she said, "You see, in my country, sometimes you hear that piece of paper." And I could see the terror. I could see how that affected them. There's also a Bhutanese gentleman that we served in the Madison area that told us that the military came to his house one night. They handed him a shovel. They had him dig his own grave. They had him lay in the ditch. Then they laughed and they walked away and said, "We'll be back." And he got up and he ran. Those are just 2 stories.
These are the horror stories.
Yes, they are horror stories, and I'm sure there are many of them. Mm-hmm. What about since this order has come into effect? I mean, it's only a couple days now, but have you noticed any animosity, any actions taken against refugees? Are we still the welcoming nation that you experienced even after 9/11?
Yeah, actually, now the refugees that I deal with right now, they are just scared. They are scared. Just yesterday they told me that 2 of the refugees were deported from Michigan. I don't know the families, but they know the families. And they told me that 2 of the people were deported this weekend. So I don't know the whole story about that, but they are scared. They are all scared. I'm scared. I'm scared. I've been a citizen for 35 years, and I'm scared for myself, my children, my grandchildren. That's how this all, and never have I been scared, never. I'm a very daring woman. I don't, I go out. I mean, I'm still not that scared, but I will still go out. But it's just how this thing has done to citizens, even naturalized citizens. It's not just this thing is affecting a lot of people. And so, I mean, it is changing the atmosphere of America. It's changing the atmosphere of America. This is not America. This is not how Americans are. And I have faith that things will change. If we all work towards it, it will change. It will come back to what real America is. This is not America.
Are you hearing about the same kind of fear, Mary, from those you're working with?
I do. I do hear that fear all the time. And I'm somewhat fearful myself. This is really, there's been so many, the executive orders, and I know there were executive orders done before, but these executive orders just have come so quickly, and there seems to be so much confusion about them.
Yes.
In terms of this executive order that came out Friday, we had been expecting it all week. We had some idea of what the content might be, but it was released so late in the week, and so it was a very stressful week. So I myself am fearful. I know that many refugees, even those with that are citizens and now carry American passports, are also very fearful. So just trying to have them focus on the fact that this is America, and we do have debate, and we do have hopefully civil discourse, and that in the long run, I'm optimistic that this will all work out.
We're going to welcome phone calls and other forms of communication with us. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're talking this hour about President Trump's executive order banning refugees from around the world. Obviously not well communicated to people who are in charge of enforcing that order. There has been chaos all over the country and not a firm set of ideas about what you need to do, be you working for a resettlement agency or if you're on a border patrol. It's still slightly unclear what are the ramifications of this order. And the political fallout continues. Yesterday, the Deputy Attorney General, who said that she could not legally enforce this executive order, was fired by the president, and so on it goes. We have two guests with us. Mary Flynn is program supervisor at Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan, overseeing the Refugee Resettlement Organization. Rafada Rain is also here. She is from Pakistan originally, owner of the Crescent Learning Center on Layton Avenue in Milwaukee. She's with the Islamic Society of Milwaukee and also has been a practicing dentist. So we have a number of lines that are open. What do you make of this executive order? If you are a refugee yourself or you've been a refugee, we're interested in hearing from you about your thoughts about this order as well. Plus, we have thoughts from other people who we have woven into our program today. This is the Michael Hayden, who is the former director of the CIA and ex-National Security Administration. These are his thoughts on the order from, what is today, 30th? 31st?
31st.
2 days ago is what he had to say.
It's a horrible move. It is a political, ideological move driven by the language of the campaign and, frankly, campaign promises. Promises in the campaign that were hyped by an exaggeration of the threat. And in fact, what we're doing now has probably made us less safe today than we were Friday morning before this happened, because we are now living the worst jihadist narrative possible, that there is undying enmity between Islam and the West.
Our number is 800-486-8655, and we start our calls with Madeline in De Pere. Hi, Madeline.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I have a question and also a comment. I consider myself to be a devout Christian, but I'm totally opposed to what he is doing to the Muslim people and for the hate that he is causing to come between people. And but I have a question. I noticed that one of the groups that he has put on sort of a permanent hold are the Syrians. And but some of my friends who are Trump supporters say that he has he's going to let Christians come. And but is it correct that Christians who live in Syria can come? That is one of my questions. And also, I noticed that, I just realized today when I read the paper that he did not include Saudi Arabia, which is the people, where the people came from who bombed the, who ran the plane into Trump Towers. I mean, not Trump Towers,
right,
to the Twin Towers.
Right. Let's talk about Syrians for a moment. What are the guidelines now for Syrians?
Well, the executive order right now is stating that there's going to be a complete hold or ban on any refugee arrivals of any kind for the 120 days. The executive order also seems to indicate at this time that Syrians are going to be permanently prohibited from entering the United States for the foreseeable future. But now there's also been information coming out that there will also be humanitarian reviews on a case-by-case basis, and there is some focus on Christians or religious minorities from the seven banned countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, every day, you know, there seems to be a bit of clarity to it. I know that SIVs, special immigrant visa holders, are from Iraq, are also going to receive clearance and relaxation of the ban as well. These are people that provided material support to the United States military, the interpreters, drivers, medical people. They did a lot of things for the United States government, and we simply have to follow through on our commitment.
So let me get this right. If you're a Christian, you're considered a minority in Syria, and you can appeal under humanitarian grounds. If you're a Muslim who's lived in Syria, and you've undergone, as many Muslims have, horrendous events, families being killed, bombed, etc., and you've had to live in a refugee camp in Jordan for a number of years, you cannot appeal on humanitarian grounds.
That's what I understand, yes.
And what about the Muslims who were in the Christian-dominated country? Can they appeal on humanitarian grounds?
That is the question, because Burmese Rohingya are actually minority Muslims in their country. I often hear from refugees, especially people coming from the Middle East, that yes, you know, those countries are primarily Muslim. However, Christians and Muslims, just like in the United States, Jews, Protestants,
right,
Episcopalians, Catholics, live side by side,
yes,
for generations peacefully. This is a little bit of a political construct from what I understand, and many of the refugees come. I have Muslim refugee or staff that work with Christians of all kinds. I mean, there's just this neutrality and objectivity to our work because we're all driven by humanitarian mission. Every day, the guidance is changing on this, and hopefully it'll continue to change in a way that is more inclusive.
I meant to ask a follow-up, and I will now, from Michael Hayden's comments about whether or not this particular action can be, and you've heard it said by others as well, a jihadist recruiting tool.
I think this this will make more enemies. This will bring in more enemies for us because we are all over the world. It is being considered as injustice towards Muslims because no matter what he says, it is a Muslim ban. It's whatever language he's using. It doesn't matter. It is a Muslim ban. So that is what will. He is just. He's just encouraging the extremists or the people that are already disturbed get more people recruited. This is going to be more dangerous. What he's doing, it will be more dangerous for our country than the other way around.
Thanks, Madeline, for your call. We go next to Martin in Marshfield. Hi, Martin.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Well, thank you so much for discussing this really important topic. I guess I'm just kind of heartbroken. We have a very large physician group practice in Marshfield called the Marshfield Clinic and St. Joseph's Hospital as well. And we rely on talent from all over the world to care for sick and suffering people from all over Wisconsin, predominantly north, central and western Wisconsin. And at our last Christmas, or at our last party, we had a very good friend from Bosnia. She's a Muslim, and she's a trauma surgeon. We had a very dear friend who was raised in the U.S. Of Indian heritage, who is Hindu, and another physician who is Christian from Iraq. And we just see the richness that these folks contribute to the community. The thing that's most striking is we have a very intimate friend from Syria who's a hematologist, oncologist. We know of lives that he has literally saved. And as of April 5th, because his work permit expires, it's very possible that he'll need to quit working. And it just seems like a totally nonsensical situation and totally heartbreaking for those of us. And I guess the thing that I want to, for those of us who've lived in this community forever, and I guess the thing I wanted to communicate is I've heard so much hate and so many people are talking about the benefits and the need to be careful, but all of the folks I've mentioned have been just wonderful contributing members to our community forever, and they pose no risk and provide great benefit. And we believe in treating people with dignity regardless of status or education. But man, when you see how hard these folks have worked to make our little community a better place. We just can't tolerate this treatment.
Mary. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would like to say that 30 to 40% of the medical doctors in this country are immigrants.
Really?
Or children of immigrants. And if we can trust them to take care of our bodies, of our ourselves, why are we afraid of them now just because one man said it? That immigrants are not allowed, or we immigrants have made this country. We are the country of immigrants. So I would just second your thought that this is just not right.
Mary, you want to comment?
I always go back to the story. It's kind of one of my fallback stories is. One of the staff said to me one time, you know, why do you eat Mexican food? You're not Mexican. You know, why do you eat Italian food? And I think what Michael from Marshfield just really kind of gave a real view about is that this is what America's all about. There's all sorts of different people, and they all bring so much every day. And, you know, I think we've just really grown accustomed to a great deal of difference and diversity in the United States, and we've always really kind of benefited across the board from that, not only medical, but restaurants and entertainment, and so what he said really struck home.
Mm-hmm. What is the status? I have heard, I think on NPR a couple days ago, that there are as many as 15,000 students from these seven targeted countries who are in the United States studying right now. What is their status? We don't know.
What I heard on NPR and at the press conference this morning, that they are all very concerned. They are all very concerned as to what is their status now. And one of the students was talking about it, that why should we be scared? They were holding the banner saying, we are students, not terrorists. So that's they are all concerned about their status in the country right now.
Mm-hmm. Travis on Facebook writes, compassion toward refugees does not mean we have to sacrifice our security. As America's president, Trump's number one duty is to protect the citizens. ISIS had vowed to pose as Syrian refugees, and some have. Compassion toward refugees will come in the form of assisting them, settling them in safe zones in Saudi Arabia.
That's a big comment.
Yeah.
I remember last year and 2 years ago when the Syrian situation came to the fore nationally. And I think Kathleen and I mentioned at that time that, you know, we know that there are people that are fleeing these very same people. And we know that some people were sitting in boats across from somebody that they knew had ill intent. But once again, during that screening process or any of the interview process, I'm sure that they're making sure that they are saying this person, I knew him back home. I don't want to associate with him. And, you know, all of these codes that people use to talk. So I just, you know, once again, really do have confidence in the screening process. The refugee interview process is so extensive, and it's multiple over and over again. And all those stories have to match every single time. And if there's one chink in the armor, they're going to go back and they're going to ask again. Pretty hard to keep up a facade or a ruse, you know, through several months and years of interviews. A couple years ago, the Sikh temple shooting.
Yes.
I believe that the attacker in that situation had actually befriended one of our staff, one of our Iraqi refugee clients, because a refugee client came to my office about a very serious matter, and he said that his friend downstairs, Wade, was helping him with appointments and driving him. And the location of the house and the location of the attacker's address all matched.
Mm.
So, you know, he certainly wasn't a refugee, and he was helping one.
Right.
And look how that happened.
Right.
There's a lot of people doing bad things. But as Rafat said, how many of them have ever been refugees?
Let's go next. Thank you very much for your call, Martin. We go to Judge in Chippewa Falls. Hi.
It's George.
Oh, George. Hi, George.
Good morning, or good afternoon. I've been in different parts of the world, lived in a couple And I'm a product of a war baby, of born right after World War II. I think that what we're doing by blocking these people is one of the most inhumane things we can do. I think that we will lose our right to be called a civilized society if we don't reverse this. And I guess that's really what I wanted to say.
Thank you, George, for your call. Rafat?
Yeah, I agree with him. I say that we are first humans. And the caller before that said that President Trump, his first duty is to protect the country. I agree with that. But before anything else, before we being Americans or Muslims or Christians, we are human beings. And as human beings, we help each other. We help people in need. That comes first. And then we become whatever we become. So that is the most important thing in my mind. And I agree with the speaker and the caller right now.
Thank you very much for your call, George. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and we have some lines open. If you'd also like to use an email, that's fine, talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. Joining us in our studios, Rafat Arain, who is the owner of the Crescent Learning Center. She works with the majority refugee population. It's in Milwaukee. She's originally from Pakistan. She's also with the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. Mary Flynn, Program Supervisor at Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan, overseeing the Refugee Resettlement Organization. And they're welcoming your phone calls. I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, but I'll ask you anyhow, and you can say no if you don't want to talk about it. Can you tell us what happened with Syrian refugees in Hudson, Wisconsin?
You know, that was a really interesting situation for me. I'll give you a little background on it. There's something called the Remote Placement Program, because when refugees are admitted to the United States, they have to be placed within either 100 miles they have to be placed a maximum of 100 miles from a resettlement agency. And in this case, there is no resettlement agency in Hudson, Wisconsin. However, it is right across the river from the Twin Cities, but that's in Minnesota. So there was a single family member that was living in Hudson, Wisconsin, and she was a relative to a total of 6 cases, 26 people altogether. And there had been some work and some activities done in the Hudson area since about September or October, but there was these families needed to go. They were fully vetted. They had medical screenings. They had visas set up to be able to arrive in the United States. And those are time limited. And if the time runs out, then you have to redo all the visas. And sometimes there's more security clearances that need to be done again. So the Department of State said, you know, we really need to get these people moving. They've been in Jordan for 5 years. They need to go. And there was also a woman attached to that case with severe cerebral palsy. And so there was some interest in making sure that they were brought to safety. So it wasn't moving fast enough, because the Remote Placement Agency was actually the national agency of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. That was a little unusual, because usually there's a resettlement agency such as ours directly involved. So the State Department called our national agency, LIRS, and said, hey, you know, we know that you have an affiliate in Milwaukee and Madison that may be able to move these cases along on a more timely basis. So usually a remote placement is one case with a family member or a friend in a remote placement such as Hudson. But this was 6 cases, 26 people altogether. So LSS always tries to do due diligence, and me and 2 of my best staff people, one is Iraqi and the other one is Nepali, we went up to Hudson and we met with the family member up there, and we also met with a church, St. Patrick's Church, that had offered to accept and resettle all these people, but they were looking for guidance. Oh my gosh, it's 26 people. What do we do? How do we do this? What's expected of us? And when we went up there, it became pretty clear to us that 26 people for this one family member. I looked at her and said, are you prepared to have your immediate family increased by 26 people in one day. And she looked at me and she went, no, I'm really not. But we really took a look at a lot of other things. And Hudson Community and Systems, the school district, the hospital, they were all very welcoming. The church community, a lot of people were very welcoming. But we decided the best interest of the cases, and they were going to be resettled as a single extended unit of 26. They could not be separated. And LSS decided that it was in the case's best interest to have them come to Milwaukee, where there is language and schools that handle a lot of refugee children. So that was the outcome of our assessment. While I was there, I had something really interesting happen. We met with the mayor, and we also met with the district representative of Sean Duffy's office and several other people. We met an extensive number of community stakeholders, and they said, you know, Mary, there's a lot of animosity and anti-refugee sentiment here. They said, you know, the Twin Cities is right across the river, and we are very aware of what's going on up in the Twin Cities. So if you really want to see the other side of this, you should go to this meeting tonight. And there were two lawyers present. One was a lawyer with the city, and one was a lawyer that was a volunteer with the church. And the church lawyer said, I would counsel you to not go. I'd be concerned for you and your safety. And the city attorney said, I think that she should go because she'll hear the other side of this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, too. You can't just listen and read and hear things that you agree with. You want to make sure that you have a comprehensive view. So I went, and actually the mayor of Hudson accompanied me along with the pastor of a church, and I walked into a situation that was a remarkable experience for me, but it validated to me as well that a lot of this discourse that's going on right now is based on lack of information. Once people have an opportunity to ask questions in an open, accepting venue, you can start to sow the seeds of hope, and that's exactly what happened. And a couple people that were there shook my hand, and about 30% of them shook my hand and waited to give some words of encouragement, thanking me for the courage to stand there and take their questions. And the questions were pretty remarkable. There was a story. This one man said to me, I want you to give me one reason why we should ever let an Iraqi in this country. And I said, I know a man that took a bullet in the face for an American soldier. I said, you don't think he deserves to be here? And he said, no. I said, do any of you think he should be here? And the whole room said no.
Oh my.
I said, you're telling me that a person who saved the life of an American soldier is not worth review to come into the United States? And he provided material support to the U.S. military. And they went, no. And don't give me your stories. They said, we don't care. And I just looked at them, and I was very real, and I just said, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. But I also wanted to make sure that I stayed open and to truly listen to them because they needed information, and it was an opportunity to do so.
What were they afraid of?
Muslims, people from the Middle East, terrorism. These are all very scary subjects. Not the Muslims and not the Iraqis, but the terrorism is very scary. And we share, as an American, I share that fear like the refugees that fled it. And I think we all remember 9/11 and how that felt.
Right.
But also how much the nation came together and drew comfort, solace, and strength from that as well.
And yet you have to, you have to encourage everybody to see everything, because just a short time later, we had a horrible mass killing at a mosque in Quebec City by a white nationalist, evidently, who's associated with far-right groups. So that's happening as well. Are people not seeing that?
It's just that I can't even talk.
I know, I'm sorry.
My voice is gone.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's just that ignorance about Islam. That's what, you know, and false information. That's what it is. That's what is happening. I will like to tell you what happened after 9/11. When 9/11 happened, the same day, my neighbors in Brookfield were calling me and saying, Rafat, what they are saying on the radio is not anything that you, what you are. They have known me. They were very welcoming to us all the time, and the schools and everything. They would tell me, Rafat, I'm going for groceries. Can I bring you some groceries? Please don't go out. People will be. I said no. I was not afraid of my neighbors. They were taking care of us at that time. It's just now that the propaganda has happened against the Muslims with false things. Yes, if somebody does, one Muslim does one thing wrong, why is the whole community blamed for that? There have been many times Christians have done things and other religious groups have done things. What happened in the Sikh temple was not a Muslim. No. Was not. Actually, it was for the Muslims that that guy had gone. Poor Sikh people got attacked. It was aimed for us. But nobody talks about that. They don't think that they are terrorists. Terrorism, it does not. No religion teaches terrorism. No religion teaches terrorism. I don't know why they have to blame the religion or the religious people for terrorism. It's a sad story.
More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network. This is, we told you we would weave in a few other voices. This is the president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition holding a news conference about this executive order on January 30th. This is Janan Najib.
The president claims that immigrants from Syria, Iraq, Iran, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, and Yemen are being banned for security reasons to prevent potential terrorists from entering the United States. There is no visa ban on Saudi Arabia, the country that produced the 9/11 hijackers, which indicates that this is clearly motivated by religious and racial bigotry.
And this is Rudy Giuliani, who was one of the architects. Evidently, the president was called Rudy Giuliani and asked him a way to that we could legally do this executive order. And here's his response.
I'll tell you the whole history of it. So right. When he first announced it, he said Muslim ban. He called me up. He said, put a commission together. Show me the right way to do it legally. I put a commission together with Judge Mukasey, with Congressman McCall, Pete King, whole group of other very expert lawyers on this. And what we did was we focused on, instead of religion, danger. The areas of the world that create danger for us, which is a factual basis, not a religious basis. Perfectly legal, perfectly sensible, and that's what the ban is based on. It's not based on religion. It's based on places where there are substantial evidence that people are sending terrorists into our country.
Is it based on terror? Is it based on religion?
Oh, it's based on terror. I would like to know what terrorists came from any of those countries. Name one terrorist that came from any of those seven countries. I don't know any. I've never read about any because
All right. And Mary, you wanted to let us know that the Syrians were relocated in Milwaukee.
Yes, the 26 people were relocated. We made our decision around, I think it was December. It was right after the trip up there, and I don't remember, but it was mid-December, and all 26 arrived safe and sound on January 16th and 18th.
All right. Julian in Glendale, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I just wanted to make a point that I think it, Americans would be good to be informed or reminded of the American history of immigration. Maybe a movie, a public service announcement, maybe a new school history curriculum requirements. I mean, where Americans can learn about the experiences of for example, Irish Americans. I mean, Italian Americans. I mean, At one point in time, Irish Americans were seen by American society as a terrorist as well. One of the worst mass lynchings in U.S. history, and, you know, was of Italian Americans. I mean, that was xenophobia. Also, I think Americans should be more informed about the details of the actions of our military in these places refugees are coming from. I mean, do Americans realize that these people are fleeing death and destruction in their homes and towns and villages caused by largely the bombing by Drone American strikes, and other Western powers?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Julian, for the call. It is amazing to me, considering all we have to do is think about where our ancestors came from, and they all came from someplace else, unless you're a Native American. They all came from other places, and many suffered persecution when they came to the United States. We tend to forget all of that or add that into a discussion of what's going on right now, don't we?
Yeah, a lot of people do not realize that we, if they are not immigrants, their forefathers were immigrants. I had an argument with somebody at work that said, I asked her why this weekend was a very tough weekend for me, and she said, why? I said, with everything that's going on. He said, but he had to take care of the country. I said, tell me one thing. Where did your forefathers come from?
Yeah, and that's all. And that person had to think. Thank you both very much for being with us. We'll do follow-ups on this. Our thanks to Rafat Wayne and to Mary Flynn for being with us this hour. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the hour and to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks for your calls.